You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In the vineyard at the end of the world, Maverick Winemakers and the Rebirth of Malbec, Ian Mount tells the story of how Argentina overcame geographical isolation, natural disasters, political and economic upheavals, plus old world prejudice to become one of the world's great producers of fine wine, made possible by risk takers who made bad wine good, good wine great, and great wine a play on the world stage. The book is published by Norton. I'm very pleased that it has brought Ian Mount to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Pleasure to be here.
You say an experience in a Buenos Aires hospital was one of the inspirations for this book. What happened? Did they serve you wine?
No, although it is always interesting that most Buenos Aires hospitals have a wine list for guests so they can have some wine while they're visiting their friends and family. But what happened was I was in getting a minor operation, and my doctor at the time told me that she reminded me of the fact that I had a certain allowance for extras, incidentals, and that I should make use of it by calling down to the cafe and getting the most expensive wine I could find that fit under that cap, and to remind them to not take the cork out so I could take it home.
Well, why were you having an operation in Argentina?
Because I live there. I've lived there since 2005.
You begin your book with an anecdote about General José de San Martín. Who was he, and why do you start off with his story?
Well, he is the George Washington of Argentine history, and he was a great aficionado of wine. And one of his pet peeves was that Argentines, whether native-born or those who had just moved there, looked down on the local product, thought that only Spain or France or Italy could make good wine. And in the beginning anecdote of the book, he runs a test where he switches the labels on bottles of wine from Malaga in Spain and wine from Mendoza in Argentina. And the visitors obviously are judging by the label, and they talk about how the one labeled Malaga is great, and then when he tells them that it's from Mendoza, they can't believe it and change their opinions.
But so winemaking goes back a long time in Argentina. Why is it that that when I think of Andean wines, and till fairly recently, all I think about is Chilean wines?
Well, for the longest time, following the Great Depression up until the late 70s, early 80s, Argentina had a closed economy. They barely let in imports, and people in Argentina drank all the wine that was made in Argentina, and very little ever left the country. So you would have never known that they had wine because you'd have to go to Argentina to have it.
And Chile, on the other hand, understood the power of export?
Well, Chile has a less pervasive wine drinking culture, and they make a lot more wine than the population could drink. In Argentina, it's in a sense an old world Italian culture, and everybody drinks wine.
But we're talking about an Italian culture because so many immigrants came from Italy, and yet the most famous grape in Argentina is a French grape, and not a very respected one. The Malbec is the grape that is used in Bordeaux, mostly to give the wines a deeper color.
Exactly. Malbec was one of the six grapes allowed in the Bordeaux blend, and it was mostly there to give color and a little heft, if you will, to some wines because it would often get sort of washed out because of excessive rains. But it was a very weak grape. If there was any moisture, bugs, excessive rain, etc., it would die or not produce fruit. But a French botanist brought it over to the New World almost by chance among many other grapes he brought, and he was brought into Argentina and planted it there where it flourished.
That's Peugeot, who had something of a mad scientist reputation.
He was a sort of a crazy man who had very little respect for the conventions of the day. He famously went to the top of the steeple in Mendoza and called his dogs from the square below and had them run through the church.
So he brought these French varietals, and those are the ones that are made in California, for example, and elsewhere in Chile. But Malbec is, except for an area in France, Cahors, Malbec is not the considered a great wine grape. So how did it become the dominant one in Argentina?
In part because the weather in Argentina is ideally suited for the grape. It's hot and dry in the Andean West, where most of the vineyards in Argentina are. And that weather allows people to grow it without fear of it being attacked by pests or mold. And then you also have the issue that the Andean West has different levels of altitude that allow the winemakers to play with the palate. You move from very dark fruits at high altitude to more strawberry flavors at low altitude. So you can really create complex and interesting wines with it there.
You say Argentina is unique compared with other New World winemaking countries because although it has an Old World wine culture, it's been influenced by immigrants in a distinctly New World way. What do you mean by that?
Well, it has its Old World culture brought in by immigrants in the late 19th century. Millions of Spaniards and Italians arrived between, say, 1880 and the First World War, and they created wine much in the image of what was being drunk in the Old World at the time.
Were they bringing in Spanish and Italian grapes?
No. Did
Sangiovese do well in
Sangiovese was a terrible disaster in Argentina, actually. The people tried that many times and have now, I think, officially given up on it. But what they did is they brought in the skills for winemaking from the Old World, but they didn't bring in all the rules. So you don't have these sort of fatwas against irrigation or use of this or that technique as you might have in France or Italy.
Now, Argentina has a very strong meat culture. I don't know whether that plays a role in this or whether the fact that it's a Catholic country and wine has religious significance for Catholics is a key factor here.
Part of Argentina's wine culture comes from the fact that it was Catholic. The Jesuit order had a sort of monopoly on wine in the first few centuries of Argentina's existence. They were the only ones allowed to make wine, and it was only to be used for sacramental purposes so that other wine that was drunk in the country was brought in from Italy. From Spain, excuse me.
And when did they realize that this area in the Andes was a good place to start growing wine, grapes?
Well, the first Spanish conquistadors arrived there in 1561 in Mendoza, and that's when they started planting there, and they quickly realized that it was the perfect climate for grape growing, and also because they could control the irrigation there, they had a lot more ability to control how well the grapes grew and how much they grew.
Why was Argentina so attractive to Italian immigrants?
The joke at the time was that there were two boats backed up in the port of Genoa, and one in the back said New York and the other said Buenos Aires, and you sort of flipped a coin because at the time the two countries had this sort of similar prospects ahead of them. And because there were fewer people in Argentina, the Italians made a much larger impact.
You said it was a closed economy. Was it a closed economy during the years that Juan and Evita ruled?
Yes. The idea was that they wouldn't import basically anything so that local industry would grow up and produce everything needed in the country. And that worked to an extent, but that also meant that a lot of ideas didn't come in and a lot of inventions from Europe did not come in. So you got, for example, in the wine industry, a lot of the equipment you saw in the industry in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s was either made in the 1920s in Europe or made in Argentina afterward and was just copying the 1920s equipment.
Then Hector Greco, known as the Godfather, became a powerful figure in Argentine wine history. This is during the Dirty War years?
This is during the Dirty War. This is the late 70s and up until 1980-81. He was a character right out of central casting. He had a thin mustache. He wore dark glasses because he had a wall eye, and he was always surrounded by a sort of entourage of advisors. And he tried to corner the wine market in part by starting a bank, offering people higher interest rates than other banks, and then taking all the money and buying wineries with it. This was fine until people wanted their money back and there was no money. There was just wine.
And not the greatest wine in the world?
Not the greatest at the time because of the closed system, people were used to drinking this wine, which is basically styled like Italian wine from the 1920s.
Then along comes a guy named Nicolas Catena, and he starts improving the standards. This is the man who's been called the Robert Mondavi of Mendoza, but also the Goldman Sachs of Mendoza?
Well, he is the third generation of a well-known wine family in Argentina.
But he's an economist.
He's an economist, yes. His father or grandfather founded a bodega, a winery. His father grew it, and then he took it over almost by accident when his mother and grandfather died in an accident. And he built it into this giant using, say, cold reason, if you will, to squeeze the most out of it and expand his market.
And still, there's still Catena wines.
It's, for Americans, probably the best-known winery in Argentina.
So when did Argentina open up and start exporting wines? Because I would assume that's once you start exporting wines, you have to raise your standards.
Exactly. The wines really started to come out in the 90s. Some in the early 90s, but really in the late 90s was when Argentina made its impact in the world, and especially in the United States. I always joke that I remember when my parents switched from beer and scotch to red wine, and a lot of Americans did so at the same time in the early 90s. And this was right when Argentine wine came in, which is a great synchronicity.
In Chile, they brought in a lot of French advisors. What happened in Argentina?
Argentina brought in a good number of advisors to bring in the sort of cutting-edge techniques. Michel Roland came in the late 80s and brought the whole idea of growing fewer grapes, pruning a lot, and making darker and more powerful wines.
Now, as movie viewers will remember that he was kind of an object of ridicule in a film called Mondovino, but he really does make great wines in Argentina.
He does. He makes consistently very good wines. Those who criticize him say that he makes the same wine everywhere and that you can't tell one of his wines from point A from point B, so a French wine from an Argentine wine. I don't think that's entirely true. I think that's a bit unfair.
They also must have been looking at what was going on in California as a guide, a model for how to approach winemaking.
Well, California was the guide for Nicolas Catena, the person you mentioned before. He was doing some economics work at the University of Berkeley and happened to visit Robert Mondavi's winery, fell in love with the idea that you could challenge the French, and hired one of Robert Mondavi's winemakers, a guy named Paul Hobbs, who's since become rather famous.
Now, much of the growth occurred during the reign of President Carlos Menem, who has been accused since he left office of being rather corrupt. But he was good for the Argentine wine industry?
He was good in the sense that he opened the borders and people could suddenly import what they wanted. And he also, by following sort of Wall Street economic prescriptions, made the country an attractive investment. In the 90s, some $1.5 billion poured into Argentina and into the wine industry there. And two-thirds of that $1 billion was from abroad.
Now, I'm assuming that Argentina followed the model that we saw in California where Cabernets and Chardonnays were the dominant wines. When did Malbec take over?
Well, people like Nicolas Catena, who first saw the need to improve the wines, were often Francophiles, and they believed that if you're going to compete in the world stage, you had to have Chardonnay and Cabernet. But a lot of the old school Argentine winemakers and a lot of the new foreign consultants really fell in love with Malbec. It was a taste they'd never had before, and they realized that this could be great if treated right. And they started to make true international quality Malbecs in the mid-late 90s.
And then the Argentine economy just collapsed in the early 2000s. What effect did that have on the wine industry?
It's curious. It's probably the best thing that ever happened to the wine industry, because when the economy crashed, the peso devalued, and what was once a $1 one peso was $1 4 pesos or 5 pesos. Now, for winemakers, this was great because all their costs were in pesos, but when they sold wine abroad, it was all in dollars.
Well, I'm assuming also that if I were an ambitious young winemaker and I looked at Napa and saw that an acre was going for $300,000 and it was going for $3,000 or $4,000 in Mendoza, that I might want to go to Argentina.
A lot of people did. A lot of people went in big and built huge estates of wines, of vineyards and wineries. They're some of the most monumental wineries you've ever seen down in Mendoza. They have very thick cement walls and very few windows because of the heat, so they look like Supermax prisons almost.
So what's the situation today? Isn't Argentina once again suffering from economic problems, high inflation?
Yes, Argentina's inflation rate has been in the order of 20 or 25% for the last few years. It's hard to tell because the government doesn't report the inflation rate or the actual one.
Is Robert Mugabe the new president?
Maybe someday. Not for now. And what happens is because the costs are going up, people who export find their profit margins shrinking to zero. So the options are really they can take no profit, stop selling abroad, or make cheaper wine and pass it off as the same wine, none of which are really good options.
So we're seeing less Argentine wine in New York stores again?
For now, people are taking the lower profit margins because it was a hard-fought thing to get shelf space, and they don't want to lose it again.
Well, how do you see this book as a book about winemaking or a book about how the history of a country affects how something is made?
I would say I look at how a history of a country affects a product. I say it's the history of Argentina told through wine, because wine is a bit like the Zelig character. It's at every point in Argentina's history, and it's affected in very interesting and unique ways.
And does Argentina see itself in competition with Chile just across the Andes?
It's a bit of sort of France and Germany effect, and I think they feel that they're winning now, Argentina, that is. And there's been some recent sort of peevish comments coming from the Chilean wine board about Malbec being a fad, and it'll be gone in a few years.
Ian Mount has written about wine for the Wall Street Journal, Food and Wine, other publications. His first book is The Vineyard at the End of the World. It is published by Norton, and I want to thank him so much for being on our show today.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.